Hello from Tokyo.
Write that down, Fumi Saito.
Yeah, Haku, King Haku was one of the first ever pro wrestlers I saw live up close in person. Not that close. It was up in
What company was that?
WWF.
Okay. So he was already Haku.
Yep. He was Haku, him and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, who blew fire.
Oh, single match? Oh, okay.
Yeah, second match on the card. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Did you see Haku and Tonga Kid as the Islanders or something?
I used to watch them all the time on
So that's WWE,
set tape.
WWF version of Haku then. But he already was veteran then, you know. When you hear Haku, probably today's fan just only associate him with WWE, you know, WWE Haku or WCW Ming, huh? But he actually started wrestling professionally back in 1977, you know? And yeah, actually, that the little fact that the history known that he was actually born in Tonga, island of Tonga, kingdom of Tonga. And age 15, he came to Japan. Age 15, he came to Japan to be a sumo wrestler. Five young guys were sent by King of Tonga to be sumo wrestler, and Fukunoshima, we're gonna use name Haku because it's most popular ones, you know. Mm-hmm. But Haku's name, sumo name, was Fukunoshima. Fukunoshima. He came to Japan in 1974, 15 years of age, very young, and wrestled, you know, he speaks perfect Japanese, really.
Even today.
Even today, yeah. So it's like, konnichiwa, everything. It's just, when you see him, in person, start talking in Japanese because his Japanese is so good, you know. For some reason, small world, you know, nobody speaks English or anything like that. So they were forced to learn, you know. Mm. And yeah, he came to Japan when he was 15. So he picked up a language real quick and he really speaks perfect Japanese. And he was in sumo for 2 years until he was 17. Not because he didn't really drop out, but there was a sumo stable here, right? Asahiyama Bear, all these things, that his stable was breaking up and he couldn't really choose one big boss over the other. And he was forced to kind of withdraw from that sumo stable, you know? So he went back to Tonga once when he was 17, they then came back and joined Jan Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling in July of 1977. He was still 18, Haku, you know, now what the Haku is 65? Yeah. But he was born 1959 and he came to Japan when he was 15, then left once when he was 17, came back when he was 18. It was 1977. He joined Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. He was going to be in Japan side, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Much like later on, John Tenta, former sumo wrestler, started out, you know, had a dojo training in Japan, and you debut in Japan, and you work, not American side, but Japanese side, you know, like local babyface type. And young Fukunoshima, we call it, but he was, let's use the name Haku, but he had so many different ring names before he got to Haku. He was Prince Tonga. Mm-hmm. And one time he was Tama Tonga, much like today's New Japan superstar, his adopted son, Tama Tonga. Prince Tonga, Tama Tonga, King Tonga, and King Kong Tonga before he was Haku. Anyhow, that July of 1977, he joined Jan Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. He was going to be Jan Baba, Jumbo Tsurura, Genichiro Tenryu. He was going to be a number four in All Japan Pro Wrestling. And he was trained under Jan Baba's All Japan Dojo. Then, December of 1977, he was sent to Amarillo, Texas to be trained under Dorian Terry Funk. Much like Jumbo Tsurura was back in 73, but, you know, just like Tenryu was the previous year, 1976. So he was being groomed to be the number four guy, babyface, for All Japan Pro Wrestling. But after he debuted in Amarillo, Texas, he spent much of 78 in Amarillo, then went to Los Angeles. and wrestled people like Chavo Guerrero Classic or the very young Roddy Piper, mm-hmm. you know? Then went down to Tennessee and wrestled people like young David Schultz.
Dr. D. You know,
yeah, Dr. D. Then went to Hawaii and spent 6 months there when Hawaii still had territory, you know? Then came back, Haku came back to Japan 1980 to be in the Japanese side, you know? Baba, Jumbo Tsura, Tenryu, then Prince Tonga. And actually, it's kind of useless trivia, but 1981 champion, you know, 9th annual champion carnival, 1982, 10th annual champion carnival, he was in that champion carnival tournament. Wrestled, you know, single match against Baba, Jumbo, Tenryu, Bruiser Brody, Abdullah the Butcher, all of them. That he was in champion carnival's tournament, this same champion carnival tournament that goes on today, you know, not the same, but they still carry this champion carnival spring round robin tournament tradition. And 1981, 1982, young Haku was part of that. So he was like old Japan wrestler, you know, not too many people remember that now because of Haku, Islander was Tonga Kid, and the very famous tag team Haku and Andre the Giant as a Colossal Connection, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So after this, you know, the champion carnival tournament in All Japan Pro Wrestling 81, 82, it was time for him to go see the world. Go see the world. Went back to America. It was Dory Funk Jr. who brought him into NWA, Florida, 82, as a King Tonga, you know. Then worked, you know, NWA Florida, went to Puerto Rico, then of all places, in 84, he went up to Montreal, Canada. Not a Haku, but the King Tonga against Dino Bravo was the main event in Montreal at the time. Isn't that interesting? Then 84, Montreal company merged into then WWF. You know, it was like 1984 that Vince McMahon's vision of expansion, national expansion, and buying out all these existing, you know, smaller company. Like Vince McMahon merged Montreal company and they merged Stu Hart's Calgary territory. And in that process, Dino Bravo and King Tonga signed with WWE, mm-hmm. 84, yeah. Then became Haku. First babyface, before he got so heavy, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Haku and Tonga Kid, today's Anoa'i family, you know, like, you know, bloodline family, not really, they're from different island, Samoa to Tonga, you know, it's two different countries, I mean, two different, like, a tribe. But Tonga Kid and Haku was the team of Islanders in 1984 WWE. Young babyface, huh?
Weren't they also managed by Bobby Heenan for a little
Bobby
bit?
Bobby Heenan and maybe like a Bobby Heenan and probably Lou Albano.
Probably Lou Albano, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, colorful 1984 version of WWE. So many wrestlers, 100 wrestlers in three different, you know, cities, you know, and then they were kind of, it's easy to be lost and shuffled, huh?
At that time, sure.
Yeah, and then the reason he took the name King Haku was that after Harley Race, King Harley Race got hurt in 88, I believe, that, you know, the crown and the cape,
mm-hmm.
That the Haku King became ring, King yeah. Haku is, you know, King Crown. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the singles competition in 88, WWE champion, WWF. Hulk Hogan against Haku was programmed
mm-hmm.
in 88, yeah. And following year, that's also like lost, pretty much forgotten, that the tag team that Haku and Andre the Giant's Colossal Connection, managed by Bobby Heenan, they were WWF tag team champions.
Didn't they wrestle Tenryu and Kitao?
Kitao, or something like that, yeah. And also Demolition.
Demolition. Yeah. That was the big match. Yeah.
Yeah. And 1990, he came back to Japan as a part of Wrestling Summit. That the Wrestling Summit is another show that we talk about a lot. The 1990, spring of 1990 at Tokyo Dome, WWF, Giant Bomba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. Inoki wasn't there, he was a politician then, but All Japan, New Japan, WWF, three big companies combined to have this one big show at the Tokyo Dome called Wrestling Summit. Actually, Haku was brought back to Japan as Jumbo Tsuru's tag team partner for that show. You know, people remember from this Wrestling Summit, the main event, Hulk Hogan against Stan Hansen. Mm-hmm. You know, very historical match. Mm-hmm. Randy Savage against Tenryu, real famous match. Mm. Giant Baba under the Giant against Demolition. The one match before that was Jumbo Tsuruta Haku against Kurt Hennig, Rick Martel. Mm-hmm. Former AWA champion, you know. But Haku, at the time, I'm sure he was heel in America, but Haku coming back to Japan meant he was like an All Japan guy. So Jumbo Tsuruta and Haku as a tag team went up against Kurt Hennig and Rick Martel. And Jumbo beat Kurt Hennig. But at the time, he was looking to start working for All Japan full-time, you know, much like Stan or Terry Gordy, Steve Williams, Dan Spivey at the time. Haku wanted to turn on Jumbo Tsuruta, you know, for this match and turn heel during the match, and we'll have a program against Jumbo Tsuruta. That didn't take place, you know what I'm saying? Mm. That's what Haku wanted to do. And after that, he came back to Japan frequently. That he joined SWS, Tenryu's company. And after SWS went down, Tenryu formed another company called WAR. You know, then Haku was part of this WAR group with Tenryu. Tenryu and Haku, they're friends, both former famous sumo wrestler. You know, once you're a sumo wrestler, you're a sumo wrestler forever. You know, like a code of conduct, camaraderie, friendship, and mannerism. Sumo is like your culture. Sumo is like whole society. You know, only 650 sumo wrestlers in the whole world. You know, in today's modern world, they still have samurai hairdo, and you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And they have their own like inside terminology. And Haku really spoke Japanese, regular Japanese, and sumo language Japanese. Interesting. And Tenryu and Haku was always really tight. So Haku worked in Japan early part of 90s in a pretty regular base in Japan for Tenryu's company. That WAR tenor moved him to New Japan in 1993. And people don't remember this all that much, but 1993 Summer G1 Climax Tournament, Haku was in it. Hmm. You know, now when you talk about G1 Climax, it's like a singles round-robin tournament, like Seoul, New Japan, right? Hmm. Yeah, and then the creating new star every year. The winner of G1 Climax this year will become your next IWGP champion or something. It's like a format, huh? But Haku actually wrestled all summer for New Japan for this G1 Climax tournament. Yeah. And I guess he's a type of wrestler that doesn't really win the tournament. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he always has a good match.
Yeah, but not necessarily be a champion or not necessarily be the tournament winner. Mm. You know, it's like in the movie, he's like a strong by-player type. And he was always famous for being the tough guy outside the ring, you know?
Yeah, he has his urban legends, yeah.
Yeah, and then sometimes the wrestlers being told this during this fight, he pulled the eyeball out of the guys. You know, or that he scratched the skin off guy's back, something like that, and don't mess with Haku kind of thing. Yeah, the toughest guy.
Outrageous. Yeah. Well,
to this day, like people like Ric Flair talk about him. You know, don't mess with Ming. He is the toughest son of a bitch there is, and so he carried that aura, And it was 94. It wasn't until 94. It's 30 years ago. I'm sorry. But it wasn't until 1994 he didn't become Ming with WCW. So see, Haku is WWE name, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So when he joined WCW, much like other former WWF talent, you know, so many, like Hulk Hogan, of course, Roddy Piper, Macho Man Savage, Curt Hennig, the Earthquake, the, you know, Brutus Beefcake, the Jimmy Hart, there's so many wrestlers from WWF migrated to WCW, huh? For, you know, Monday Gene Night Oakland, Raw.
Bobby Heenan.
Oh, so, yeah, right. Everyone. So many. So then also sometimes Monday night, you know, WWE Monday Night Raw and WCW Monday Nitro, that's like wrestlers are almost identical, you know. And watching Nitro, it's like, wow, I've seen all these guys in WWF like years before. And that was like, it was not a strange feeling during 90s. Did you flip channels back and forth?
Of course. There was a format you could tell because the first couple hours would have the most pro wrestling in the ring. Usually it was on Nitro.
Yeah. And
WWF would do a lot of talking, so there wouldn't be a lot of wrestling until like 8:30, 9.
Ah, that's how.
Nitro would end with like NWO.
Yeah.
In the ring. People throwing garbage and
also never Nitro never gave you like decisive finish.
No, but then WWF would have the main event.
Yeah, right. So I remember that.
That was kind of my pattern from what I
remember. Yeah, because and also WWF will create new star, new name, new character.
Mm.
You know, and WCW Nitro will always bring in already made star. You know.
That was kind of the gimmick, right? It was kind of who's going to show up this week.
Yeah, the whole used to be in WWE.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But I believe Ming was one of them too, you know? Different character, almost like a kimono costume, you know, like Asian, and like a really like a fluffy, you know, natural, you know, like a jungle hairdo, right?
It was like Faces of Fear, right?
Yeah, and the
or not the Faces of Fear, Kevin Sullivan's.
Yeah, that's
Dungeon of
Dungeon of Doom. God, you're pretty good. I mean, that's so many faction and a team and a tag team. Yeah. It's hard to keep up. Dungeon of Doom was Kevin Sullivan, yes,
mm-hmm.
And the Face of Fear was Barbarian
with Barbarian, the tag team. Yes,
it's hard to remember though. Hard to remember, but. During this WWE WCW run, the Ming had this single match at the Bash at the Beach, 95, summer, July of 95. Ming had a single match against Sting. US title match. Yeah. So that was high up in the card. Yeah. But once you're Dungeon of Doom with Kevin Sullivan, you know, Faces of Fear with Barbarian, it's kind of another tag team like shuffled in the Nitro television. And then in the course of that, 2 hour Nitro became 3 hours, right?
Around then, yeah.
Yeah, and then endless interviews. I mean, Kevin Nash come out and do an interview for 20 minutes. You kind of do the switch, right? But the Ming was among that group, yeah.
I remember one fond memory of watching Nitro back then. There were early on when Nitro had just launched. Raw had been around for a couple years, but I remember
2 years before that.
One of the early episodes, there was a match, Faces of Fear, with Sting and Lex Luger, and it felt like at the time it felt like a pay per view match that they were giving away.
Yeah.
And it, for me, it was really because it was watching Haku and Barbarian do things you never saw them do in WWF. Front suplex off the top rope and diving headbutt and brainbuster Sting right before the Crow Sting, but he had brown hair.
Still had a colorful costume.
They were really, really athletic and again unique and different, and they stood out, and they hold the test of time too, because you can go back and watch on YouTube or anything. And geez,
yeah, I like that version of Sting too. Yeah,
a great version of Sting. Yeah, I mean that match itself was fantastic, but it holds up really well. I think it wouldn't seem out of, if you watched it on anything on regular television this week, it would hold up just as well. It wouldn't seem out of date.
Right.
And a lot of Meng or Haku's matches that you can go back and watch them, and the way he wrestled, he was fundamentally sound,
but never were given the top position. You know what I'm saying? Like a world championship program.
But they put him with guys like Ultimate Warrior, or you know, they put him with the big guys. They can make he can make the top guys look pretty strong and pretty good.
Yeah. So always like that. What Wild Samoans do. They call him like Samu used to, you know, call himself catcher. I'm a good catcher.
Mm.
You know, everybody wants to be either pitcher or batter, you know, but he's a catcher.
And the way that Haku always presented himself, he never came off like a chump, or like even when he lost, it was he never felt like he lost his toughness or his aura.
Yeah.
You know, him and Barbarian too, they always had a way of not coming off without looking like they lost face.
And also they never had this 5 minutes long promo.
No, they usually had a manager.
Yeah. So it's like they stand next to a manager, just stare at the camera, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was good. But it wasn't always big, you know, like a 300-pound guy. You know, go back to All Japan Pro Wrestling in 1977. He was still 18 years old, and his gimmick was standing dropkick.
Yeah.
Later, he wouldn't do it, right? Jan Baba said that this guy will make living just by doing that standing dropkick, you know? Yeah, I mean, this high.
Yeah. Yeah. Him, the Islanders were a real cool high-flying team that you didn't see too much of in WWF at that time. I had really fond memories of watching them on tape. Haku, especially when he was younger, he was pretty... I was from New York. I didn't see much Lucha Libre or anything, so it was kind of like martial arts, high-flying. Haku had a lot of that. It was cool. It was really cool.
Barefooted?
Barefooted with tape.
Barefooted version. Okay. Yeah. I guess he still is barefooted later on too.
Later. So he was in the WCW until it folded into WWE, and then he kind of came back.
Yeah. What was interesting was that January of 2001, there was like a WCW version of Hardcore Title. Ming against Terry Funk, you know.
Yeah.
1 week, WCW stole it and they created their version of Hardcore Title. And when you say hardcore, Terry Funk should be in there. So Ming against Terry Funk, 1 week they did that. And what was interesting was that next week, Ming was already back in WCW Royal Rumble the following week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't that interesting? And the same guy, I just watched it on the Nitro last week. Then following week, he was, as a Haku, he was in Royal Rumble surprise appearance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. But that was like a very last chapter of WCW. So he pretty much stayed, 95, 6, 7, 8, 99, 2000. Yeah. So he had this 5-year run with WCW then. Yeah. But he did come back occasionally to Japan, because Japan is like a part of Ming Haku, you know, like... the place, like a second home that he's, you know, spent his teenage years. And people don't know that much, you know. And that's why Haku sent his adopted son, Tama Tonga, to New Japan. And with New Japan Dojo System, he debuted in Japan. You know how many years Tama Tonga has been with New Japan?
More than a decade.
Now he's gone. I mean, he left, and I don't know which company he's going to sign now, but yeah.
But he was a big, big part. He probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for it, but he gets a big part in the whole resurgence of New Japan. He was there for, he was Bullet Club.
Bullet Club. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His two younger brothers have been there.
Yeah, right, now. Right.
The legacy is deep. Even Haku has sometimes show up with Bullet Club in the past.
And New Japan Rumble, you know, that
sure, yeah.
January 4th, you know, like dark match, like we call it match zero. Mm-hmm. They just send all these whomever's not on the card appear on the New Japan Rumble Battle Royal, and they don't announce it. But when you hear music, so, oh, Haku's in there. So he walks out, you know, that's the same old Haku guy. And, oh, it's a Ming sometimes, but it's the same Tonga-san. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he... I think he plays that, you know, like this connection with Japanese, you know, wrestling industry and connection with Japanese fans and connection with all the Japanese fans. Seeing him as a sumo wrestler, seeing him in All Japan, seeing him coming back and forth with All Japan, then come back as a WWE superstar. And he was part of the Tenru's SWS and WAR. So, wow, he's been back and forth, really. And yeah, so now that he could have been in WWE Hall of Fame a long time ago, but now this year's, you know, Hall of Fame inductee. I'm happy that he's in there, but it's like long overdue because he was always part of the big company. You know, it's just that he was never in this like a headlining championship, you know, main event guy. He was like right around here, you know. And always had good match on that evening, but almost as if he was taken for granted.
Yeah, I mean he was consistent and reliable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And didn't seem to have any issues with it, you know, body and
drugs. And also he was a tough guy, so nobody messed with him.
Sure, he had respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really important. I mean, if you don't have those kind of guys and girls in a company, you need those people in a company for it to really be successful. It can't just be a one or two person show.
Like a old policeman type, huh?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Policeman, they call it in wrestling. Yeah. It was interesting because he was always in good shape, you know, mm-hmm. You know, never really was injured and sidelined or anything like that. And he was in, like I said, you know, All Japan's Champion Carnival, you know, 9th, 10th Champion Carnival. And when they had Tokyo Dome Wrestling Summit, he was a tag team partner of Jumbo Tsuru. And 10 years later, 2002, or more like 12 years later, 2002, when WWF, at the time, WWF started having regular, you know, Japan tour, you know, 2002 on, they came back every year. Just no Japanese wrestler, WWE superstar, Japan tour every year. The very first Japan tour at the Yokohama Arena, people remember, you know, The Rock against Chris Jericho, the unified title match. But actually, he was in on that show too, Haku. Haku against Diamond Dallas Page. Well, people don't remember DDP's WWE, you know, run. Yokohama Arena, WWE Japan Tour, WWE European title match, Haku against DDP was in Yokohama Arena.
Wow.
He always comes back in a very important show and he'd be a part of that show, you know?
Yeah. Reliable, yeah. I mean, yeah. You never see him have a bad match. I can't think of anything, you know, he was always
in good shape, yeah.
It was always fun
to watch. 10th annual Wrestle Kingdom, New Japan, Tokyo Dome, as late as 2016, he was on the Battle Royal.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't think he's retired. He's 65 now. And it seems to be like people think he's retired and see him on the dark side of the ring, you know,
with wrestling ring. Same episode.
because we talked about John Tenta. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he was a Japanese sumo wrestler decade before John Tenta. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah.
His clip went kind of viral last week because of his reaction to him seeing Shockmaster for the first time.
Ah, okay. He didn't watch that, huh? Yeah. No, Shockmaster. I seen that one. Oh, yeah. Now Haku has, you know, like old, you know, silver gray goatee, yeah. You know? But right, he's finally showing some age. Yeah, but I don't think he's retired, you know.
Wow.
And when people or promoter wants him, he can always come back for another match.
I think so.
You know? Yeah, yeah. But he wouldn't want to because now it's Tama Tonga, you know, and their brothers, you know, and they that's their time to be superstar. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Long overdue. Yeah. They've been around. They've been around.
Yeah. When then Haku wouldn't get in the way. No. It's very, very traditional, you know, like very, like almost conservative wrestler, you know, wrestler guy.
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes about Haku's character too to get three young wrestlers like that produce those guys. I mean, that's cool. It's
kind of like I know like Afa and Shika, right? Different version of Bloodline. Yeah,
same approach though. You know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and tough guy too. You know.
Yeah,
yeah, tough guy from island culture. You know, and yeah, so it's kind of like. The reason we wanted to do this legacy was the Haku Ming's legacy is being kind of overlooked, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Because he was there for a lot of big moments, but there were also parts of other people's careers too, but he was always there.
To make other superstars shine?
Yeah, some of the foreground, background, tag team, or, you know, and now with his family in the business, he left an impact. He's leaving an impact. And not just in American wrestling or wrestling overseas, but in Japan
sumo. Oh, definitely. Yeah, sumo too, yeah.
And one of the few guys that was working with Tenryu and SWS, and those big one-off or couple big...
Yeah, the first a corporate sponsored wrestling company in Japan.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, SWS, Tenryu's SWS only lasted about 2 years, not even 3 years, but they had... 4 or 5 Tokyo Dome shows. They brought in like 20 WWE superstars at the time. But Ming kind of stayed with Tenryu after that company went down. And Tenryu started WAR, smaller version of Tenryu company. But Tenryu apparently wanted Haku to be part of that. And yeah, that led into the association with new grouping with New Japan Pro Wrestling. So actually Ming, Haku, worked both Giant Baba's Old Japan and New Japan, the two major companies in Japan. Yeah. It's not like jumping over the fence or anything, but one thing led to another. He worked both major companies. Or three companies, four companies. New Japan, SWS, WAR, and New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like he had like a long Japan run too.
Again, that's unique. Not many guys have that under the belt.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Work in both major companies,
yeah. During big periods too, during big
wrestling. That too, yeah.
So
in WWE and WCW,
yeah,
yeah.
During the TV time there and the bubble period in Japan and
bubble period, yeah,
yeah. He was a part of it. He was a part
of it. So it's like I kind of have to wonder, you know, why wasn't he in Hall of Fame until now? Yeah. Because he chose to be the by player, you know? I mean, he could have, but he didn't really push to be the headliner. You know what I'm saying? He was happy to be in that. And then he was always doing his role, you know, like in the movie, he was like hitman, you know? He was a tough guy or the bouncer guy or, you know, the fighter guy, you know, but not the lead role guy with lots of dialect.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Yeah.
Backbone.
Yeah, but the very memorable, you know, like somebody you don't forget, you know. Didn't have long lines or anything like that, but he stood out when he was on screen kind of guy.
He could communicate really clearly. He could tell a story really clearly.
Yeah.
Didn't have
and
to
it's
use
good
words.
That because every wrestler, like active wrestler inside of the business, including people like Ric Flair, don't mess with Haku or don't mess with Ming because he is the toughest guy.
Mm.
It's good to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even in wrestling, even in WWE type environment, being tough individual it kind of counts, you know.
Yeah,
within wrestling, you know, like. camaraderie or hierarchy or the locker room atmosphere, but don't mess with Ming. Don't mess with Haku. Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy is tough guy. Yeah, the legitimate tough guy. So, but he's a nice guy too. I mean, very, very friendly guy. And he, whenever he comes back, he still speaks perfect Japanese after all these years. Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Impressive.
It's good, you know, how many American or Canadian, English-speaking, Western world wrestler, the world-traveling wrestler, spoke perfect Japanese, you know?
Very few.
Yeah. Kenny Omega spoke really good, you know? And but the Ming, Haku's Japanese, like, he speaks perfect Japanese with no accent. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, like you said, yeah, Medusa speaks Japanese. There are a lot of guys who speak Japanese, you know, or like a Terry Gordy's, you know, version of Japanese, just worse, but he can get by. Or like people like Stan Hansen, he actually understands a whole lot more than he lets out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but he understands a lot more than he can say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bruiser Brody, the same way. He understands what people are saying, but he wouldn't be able to make out the complete sentence. Yeah, there's a lot of people like that. Kind of like a Keiji Muto, great Muto's English. He listens to it and understands most of it, but he doesn't want to speak. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but for Hohaku, he, for some reason, he speaks perfect Japanese. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. They train them hard in school.
Sumo wrestling, yeah.
When you're 15. He was young, yeah. So that's a good time to learn too.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Also, he was sent to sumo school too when you're 15. You know, learn you know, with this brush, you know,
calligraphy.
Yeah, and then he just spelled Fukunoshima in Japanese. And he can do that. Yeah,
he had his own kanji.
Yeah, Fukunoshima. Yeah, yeah. So some people still call him Fukunoshima.
Fukunoshima,
like island of joy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Representing Tonga.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Minami no shima, Yashi no shima, Hinodejima, Fukunoshima, Sachi no shima, Tomo no shima. It's always like island of friends, island of flower, island of happiness, island of sunrise, island of the coconut tree, island of south. This, it was just made into Japanese, you know, sumo name. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all kind of people wondered, what if he didn't, you know, this sumo stable thing, you know, that the turmoil happened politically, that they were breaking up the sumo bear he was in. He couldn't choose one boss over the other, and therefore he just had to, the Tonga sumo wrestler, all six of them had to like drop out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what if he didn't quit that time? He could have been Akebono, he could have been, yeah, you know, much higher position in sumo wrestling. Yeah. Yeah, like Akebono or Konishiki, you know, they became like a grand champions. So that was that's the what if part of history. And also, one of the Tonga wrestlers was, forgot to mention, the barbarian, Shione Bairahi. Later, he became the Konga the Barbarian. He moved to America and trained under Red Bastion and became professional wrestler, Barbarian. But those Ming and Barbarian met again, and they're friends. And well, the faces of fear later on, right?
Sure.
Yeah. He did come back to Japan, you know, in different route, but Red Bastion through New Japan, and Konga the Barbarian, Shione debuted with New Japan in 87.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was interesting. Only two out of the Tongan sumo wrestler who became American-style professional wrestler.
Hmm.
Other than that, they were like a king's bodyguards.
That's
isn't that interesting?
Very interesting, very unique.
Yeah.
You don't hear that story.
And not lie, yeah, but that's the truth, you know.
Yeah.
But now that 2 years ago, there was a big, huge earthquake in Tonga, and they're still suffering. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like lifelines, electricities, and housing and all that. So, yeah, we sent our, yeah, have to think about that sometimes. Yeah.
Of course.
People. So that was our Haku story, and not much actual details, and his actual, you know, like real legacy has been known. You know, he was part of territory days of American wrestling. He was with WWE, WWF. He was part of Monday Night War. He was with WCW, and yeah, but I don't think he's retired yet. Yeah,
no,
yeah. It would be interesting if he's gonna do his own, you know, induction speech. Yeah, we don't even know who's gonna induct Bo Nakano either. Yeah, yeah. Who do you think will be inducting Haku?
Haku, I mean his sons, or Barbarian.
Yeah,
or
somebody famous and somebody from previous era though. He was tagged in with Andre. Yeah. The Tonga Kid, who would that be? Somebody like Kevin Sullivan? I don't know. Somebody like Eric Bischoff? I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because Hall of Fame induction ceremony is always, you know, interesting every year. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite, you know, event of the year. Yeah. It'll be interesting because we learn a lot about the history, you know. Well, younger fans are not really interested in the real history, but but if you learn a lot about history, you make connection which guys and which and who trained who, and who are the cousins and brothers and who worked in territory and who had the feud with this, and it's like you make connection, or the similar type wrestling maneuvers, or somebody gave somebody a finish and using that same finish, you know, for next generation, and that means something. It's just, we learn, you know, the more we learn about it, the bigger picture we can kind of see in this wrestling world, let alone this big world, you know? Yeah,
I think. A big quilt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tapestry, yeah. Just keep building on it, building on the continuum.
Yeah, because now that they talk about so much about bloodline, right? The reality and a little bit fiction too, but they're all, you know, brothers and sisters and cousins and nephews and nieces. And it's pretty accurate. And Haku can do that too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reality mixed in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now that the WWE is half the wrestlers are second generation, you know, third generation. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But those are interesting things to learn about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So Haku, yeah, I really need to do this episode of Haku.
Yeah, so if you're listening or watching, go check out Haku's matches. Meng, Haku, King Haku, King Tonga, however you want to look.
Yeah, that wasn't flashy, so maybe, you know, when you were so young that you didn't probably pay much attention to it. And as you grow older, you appreciate wrestlers' match like his.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot better, this, you know. I think
so. Because yeah.
You understand more.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
Very good.
So if we want to find you on
social media. On X Twitter, Fumihiko Dayo, at FumihikoDayo, at Fumihiko Dayo, or just Fumi Saito on Facebook, and also on Instagram, Fumi Saito, no space, 2001.
On X, I'm at Justin Abnipper, KNIPPER. All right.
Now, we'll be doing a Q&A, questions and answer episode real
soon. We'll get to that soon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So then, until next time.
So long from Tokyo!